Welcome to the Intelligence Agency in Focus, sponsored by Leidos.
Hello, and welcome to today's program. I'm Eric White. As everybody is looking to the heavens for opportunities in space, what kinds are there for the intelligence agencies? There's the potential for creating new technologies or maximizing devices already in use. At this year's Intelligence and National Security Summit, a panel with federal experts convened to speak on this topic, moderated by Chair of the Intelligence and National Security Alliance, Tish Long. Included in the panel was Dr. Stacy Dixon, Deputy Director of the National Geospatial Intelligence Agency, Tina Harrington, who is Director of Signals Intelligence at the National Reconnaissance Office, and Major General John Shaw, Deputy Commander for Air Force Space Command. They started by laying out the overall roles their respective agencies play in space intelligence. First up was Dr. Dixon.
We exist to basically show the way, help the world, help the country understand the world. We do this by providing geospatial intelligence to policymakers, warfighter, IC intelligence community members who need to understand what's happening in different places in the world, and these techs can frankly better understand the world itself. There's a lot of information about the world, whether it's gravity, the magnetic fields, that we need to understand to be able to use the technology that exists today. We help provide that. I think we all understand that without our GPS, we would all be very lost. We help in providing that as well. And more specifically with understanding what's taking place in different countries where we may not be able to have other sources, where we may not be able to have eyes on the ground all the time. The overhead constellation really helps us do that. So NGA tries to make sure that the decision makers understand not only what's happening, to answer the questions they have, but also to provide the information that they need, which may be different than the questions that they're necessarily asking. So we want to help them understand the sort of the sensors that are out there, the capabilities that are out there to help them complete their missions. I started my career actually at the NRO, so we have a little bit of an NRO nexus here in the panel, which was a great introduction to the intelligence community. Working with NGA as a partner, and I ended up here. I'll leave it here. A couple years after that, so I'll stop there.
Thanks, Stacy. Tina.
So Tina Harrington, Director of Signals Acquisition, as part of the NRO. I have been with the NRO since 1993, which is hard to believe. I'm in a variety of positions, first as a aerospace corporation and then swapping over to government in 2006. NRO's mission is basically everything from research and development, acquisition, operations, all about fielding and doing the right thing for intel and military users. We basically work very closely with our mission partners at NGA and NSA, and then we also work very closely with the Air Force on making sure we have the right partnerships and that we are doing the right things on both sides. We are, and one of our lifebloods is innovation. One of the things I love about what's happened in commercial space is it's letting us focus our technologies with things that are just unique to us, but then leveraging so much that is coming out of the commercial world. And the other piece that I find just so exciting, watching from 1993 to now, the whole space world, is that transition with the commercial now really springing more and more to life, is how much more interest new professionals coming out of school have in space. And that's really driven by a lot of the commercial work that's being done. You know, government's thought of as boring and takes a long time. Space kind of fell as part of that, but now you see all these folks that see, because of the new launch providers that we have, because of the commercial small satellite business, the ability to do things in schools and in universities to actually launch small satellites, that's been really driven by the commercial market and the ability for us to take advantage of that market that's now coming out to help us field the generation of professionals that we need as we move forward.
Terrific, Tina. I got a couple of questions coming out of those remarks already. General Shaw.
Okay, thanks, Tish, and thanks to INSA for hosting this forum. So I'm John Shaw, Deputy Commander, Air Force Space Command, career space operator, astronautical engineer, and full disclosure, two of my favorite assignments in my career were with the National Reconnaissance Office, so we have a common thread there. In case you haven't noticed, space as a warfighting domain has been a major theme in our national security circles here for several years now. And to invoke Rick's French friend from Casablanca, we're shocked to find that space is a warfighting domain, right? Actually, in truth, I think we shouldn't be surprised. That might be the the biggest thing to take away. And why is that? Because space is critical to modern warfare and to modern society, and only increasingly so in so many different ways. And yet, it is perceived by potential adversaries to be vulnerable. And so it is only logical, and we should not be surprised, that therefore our space capabilities would therefore be threatened, and that potential adversaries would develop capabilities to threaten those our space capabilities that are so critical. So the big tectonic shift that we've been facing really within the national security arena, but more focused at Air Force Space Command, is how do we make this shift to space as a warfighting domain? The big tectonic plates that you've all been watching, I'm sure, have been the stand-up of United States Space Command, a new combatant command, really bringing back the old United States Space Command, but definitely not the same flavor, which, by the way, just was established last week in a Rose Garden ceremony at the White House, and we will cinch the thing next Monday in Colorado Springs with a ceremony overseen by the chairman, where General Raymond will take the flag for the new United States Space Command. And that brings its own challenges in its own right, and the intelligence support that that command will require, and has been a major priority for General Raymond as he stands up this new combatant command. The other big tectonic plate that we'll know more about here in a few weeks is Space Force, and that would be the organized, train, and equip arm, the service, that would then supply the capabilities and the warfighters to U.S. Space Command and the other combatant commands as necessary. And we've been looking really hard at what we think that would look like, and how do you set up a Space Force for success. But kind of maybe a little bit below the waterline that maybe hasn't got a lot of attention, we've been spending a lot of time on, is, hey, it's not just about the organizations, right? What are the capabilities that we need to develop to protect and defend our space capabilities? And perhaps the most important thing is, how do we grow the people to do that? And one component of that human capital piece is the intelligence side. We're going to have to grow intelligence professionals for the space domain that support operational and foundational intelligence for a potential war that extends to space. And it's a major focus for us. A theme I'll leave you with, I'll even challenge you to think about this right now. When you think of space and intelligence together, you might be like me. In my career, I think about intelligence collection in space coming down to the Earth, intelligence from space. We need to think really, really hard now about intelligence for space. Where is that intelligence expertise, the processes, the capabilities we have to understand what's actually happening in the space environment to support General Raymond in his capacity at United States Space Command for a potential war that may extend to space? So a new kind of focus area for us moving forward.
So General Shaw, let me just key off something there, not a question, but a comment. I'm really happy to hear you say that. Coming from the operational side of the house, those of us who have been in the intelligence profession our entire career, sometimes perfect intelligence is simply assumed. So it's nice to hear you say that you understand that we don't know everything we need to know to support operations in space. And so getting that demand signal, understanding the requirements so that those capabilities can be built, is very important.
That's Tish Long, chair of the Intelligence and National Security Alliance. You also heard from Dr. Stacy Dixon from the National Geospatial Intelligence Agency, Tina Harrington of the National Reconnaissance Office, and Major General John Shaw with the Air Force Space Command. More from the panel after a quick break. I'm Eric White.
From idea to reality, innovation is at the heart of mission success. At Leidos, we're helping our customers transform vast amounts of data into actionable intelligence. Leidos is number one on the Washington Technology Top 100, bringing unrivaled talent to bear on the intelligence community's critical missions through our data analytics, all-source analysis, linguistics, agile and sec DevOps, and advanced AI ML that allows you to see the full picture faster. At Leidos, the important work never stops. Visit leidos.com/intel to learn how.
We're listening to a panel at the recent Intelligence and National Security Summit. Its moderator, Tish Long, from the Intelligence and National Security Alliance, poses her first question to the participants. First up was Dr. Stacy Dixon of the National Geospatial Intelligence Agency.
I'm going to start off with something that was kind of woven throughout all of your comments. And this is a question for all of you. So both government and industry now have a wide range of capabilities, whether it's launch, whether it's building small sats, space-based communication systems, analytics. There is a lot out there. And what I'd like to hear from you is, what are the implications of an increasing democratization of space-based capabilities that allows any company or any adversary to operate in space? So what are the challenges? What are the opportunities for us that are posed by this dynamic?
It's exciting. I'll start there. I'll start with the good. All of the potential information that will be accessible on demand anywhere around the world is very exciting. The creativity that's going to be needed to create the tools that are going to be able to allow us to use this information, to be able to store it more efficiently, those are the things that are a little more daunting. It's a lot of things that we're going to have to be watching and monitoring. And you know, we know that we can't expand the number of people to be able to look at everything, so it's about really moving towards having that machine-human teaming, which provides a lot of other new challenges in the way we do things, but great opportunity in the way that we'll be able to allow some of the more routine, some of the more repetitive tasks to be done by a machine so that we can leave humans to be able to do the more creative, the more critical thinking. So that part is really exciting to me. I think in addition to sort of the U.S. commercial and government, the ability to also leverage all the foreign partners, not only for their satellites and sensors, but also for their analytics and for their product creation. There's a lot of opportunity out there to really not have to do everything ourselves anymore, to really leverage those alliances. And so for us, it's exciting, but a little scary because of the amount of data that has already started coming and the amount that's going to be coming that we want to have eyes on.
Next up was Tina Harrington, Director of the Signals Intelligence Systems Acquisition Directorate for the National Reconnaissance Office.
I think it's a great opportunity. I go back to, I look at what commercial is doing, and it really does let us leverage. My prior boss had a saying that she used quite often, which is we should buy what we can and build what we must. Government dollars are always, no matter what it might look like, still limited. And we want to focus that on the things that we and we alone need to do, not the things that others can do. Obviously, adversaries are going to also field things. I would say put that in the same as every other domain we work in and live in. Air domain, adversaries do things. Land domain, adversaries do things. Sea domain, adversaries, cyber. Space, maybe new to that domain, but we need to treat it the same way as we treat all the others, understanding what adversaries are doing, but we're not going to stop them. But we do need to, going back to what General Shaw mentioned, understand how we get the intelligence for it, like we have done the intelligence for all the other domains.
Major General John Shaw from Air Force Space Command.
Let me suggest an analogy that might help kind of maybe reframe how we might look at this. Because I sometimes think that this gets framed as, hey, is it government versus commercial, or that's all about the, you know, are there places that are going to be friction points and such things? And that could be true. But I'm sure, and I'll let the historians actually give you the right answer, somewhere in the 17th to 18th century, I'm sure the British Navy kind of looked around and said, holy cats, look at this empire we have with all of this commerce that suddenly kind of exploded all around the globe that is fueling the British economy, the world British economy. How did the British Navy react to that? They probably acted with a little bit of, oh, what do we now need to do in a similar way we're responding to the space question? How do we think about security in this domain now in new ways that we hadn't thought about? There's all this. But I think there was some optimism about, hey, now the economic engines of the British Empire are driving how we do things in the maritime domain, and we can benefit from that as a British Navy, and we'll look at that. At the same time, and Tina alluded to this, they're probably thinking, what are the Dutch and the French doing, and what are they learning about trafficking in the maritime domain that we don't know about, that we need to catch up with because it could be a threat to our ability to maintain maritime superiority? I just offer it as an analogy of that's kind of, I think, how this unfolds. The economic engines have been unleashed. I hope that they are sustained. I think that's a key question. And that we would simply want to leverage the best of that from a government perspective and realize that there are challenges associated with that in providing security in that environment, incentivizing further economic investment, but also being prepared for new threats in that domain.
That's Major General John Shaw, Deputy Commander of the Air Force Space Command, speaking at a recent panel at the 2019 Intelligence and National Security Summit. Hear more from the participants after another quick break. I'm Eric White.
From idea to reality, innovation is at the heart of mission success. At Leidos, we're helping our customers transform vast amounts of data into actionable intelligence. Leidos is number one on the Washington Technology Top 100, bringing unrivaled talent to bear on the intelligence community's critical missions through our data analytics, all-source analysis, linguistics, agile and SecDevOps, and advanced AI/ML that allows you to see the full picture faster. At Leidos, the important work never stops. Visit leidos.com/intel to learn how.
You need allies and partners when it comes to gathering intelligence. Things can get slightly competitive, though, when it comes to space. So what is the state of data and technology sharing agreements between agencies and other countries? That was the next question posed to a panel of experts on the topic at this year's Intelligence and National Security Summit. First to answer was Dr. Stacey Dixon, Deputy Director at the National Geospatial Intelligence Agency.
I would say that I'll look at you mentioned the partnerships with our allies. Data sharing agreements in the geospatial arena. We have 70 countries that have sharing agreements, imagery sharing agreements with. There are a lot of bilateral agreements, but more importantly, I think multilateral agreements are growing so that people in various, or countries in various regions are coming together, pooling data, and allowing the region itself to really benefit from the knowledge that individual countries are creating. So that part's looking great. With all of the different systems, and I'm thankful that there are many companies who are looking at the standards that are out there to be able to create systems and products that will fit into infrastructures and architectures that already exist. The danger in having so many different vendors is that these things will not work together, and we absolutely need them to be able to work together and to be able to ingest in systems that exist now and the systems that will exist in the future. So working well now, I think it will continue to work well, but we do have to watch it. It's not guaranteed that everything is going to be able to come together if we don't partner and have the conversations. Not force everyone to do things in a certain way, but just make sure that people know, for it to be able to ingest here, I need this out of it. I need this level of understanding of your geolocation. I need this level of understanding of your resolution. That will help us out.
Next up was Tina Harrington, Director of the Signal Intelligence Systems Acquisition Directorate for the National Reconnaissance Office.
So I'm going to use our commercial SPO that we've stood up about 2 years ago as the transition of the Enhanced View contract came over. That really, I will say, transitioned how we were thinking within the NRO quite a bit. Changed, well, before we did things more in our AS&T arm, our research and development arm, that looked at maybe how we could bring things in, we did kind of go all in at that point and really look at how do we use commercial to offset what I need to do with national tactical means. They've now done an initial set of different contracts there, looking at full production contracts in about a year with commercial. We're trying to understand how we leverage that now over on the RF remote sensing side, so, right? RF analytics. I think the other piece that I'm going to go to something Stacey said earlier, because I want to emphasize this. As much as I love the spacecraft, which is where I've spent most of my career, the ground, the TC pad, the interoperability, that is something we cannot emphasize enough. The amount of data, when you look across all of these different platforms, when you look at things that we are doing with the Air Force, the things the Air Force is doing alone, we have to get the ground caught up to all of that. We need to be able to make use of all of these big data, this big data that's coming down, and we need to be able to do it in machines, not with humans. We need to move our humans off of being on top of every pixel that comes down, and rather only those things that need a human eye on it. And that is a major shift for all of us. And that is something that we really, really do need our industrial partners to help us with. I think the allied partnerships are still very well done and maintained. And then I think within the IC, I see us working better with both of our functional managers than I've seen in the past. And a lot of that is driven by what's happening in the commercial market.
Closing out the question was Major General John Shaw from the Air Force Space Command.
All right, so this is where I have to play my role in bringing balance to the force here. So everything you just heard, it was all good. It was all about intel from space. Everything, every component and every piece of what you heard here on that, Ken, has a counterpart in intel for space. How do we understand what's going on in space? How do we harness partnerships with industry and with allies to get better space situational awareness, or as we're starting to use a term more and more now, space domain awareness, because I think it's bigger than space situational awareness. And frankly, in the same, so I know that, you know, Stacey and NGA struggle very hard with the big data problem of collating everything that can possibly be collected to understand what's happening in the terrestrial spheres, including things from space. It's a big data problem to understand what is going on within the space domain as well. Turns out space is pretty big. It's huge. And it's only getting bigger in many senses, both from a cosmological as well as a policy. So how do we make sure that we're harnessing all of the capabilities to understand and attack that problem? I could spend a lot more time trying to dive at that. I'm happy to answer questions there. But just realize there everything that you, that we've, all of the challenges that were described with regard to intel from space, from commercial allies and such, have a component in the intel for space arena.
The panel's moderator, Tish Long, from the Intelligence and National Security Alliance, had a follow-up question. We hear from Dr. Stacey Dixon.
So all that data out there, and you really are trying to leverage as much as you can from all of your partners. Let's talk about the security and integrity of all of that data. As you're trying to deal with just the amount of it, how are you dealing with the security integrity of it? And, you know, what's at stake if we don't secure that? So data assurance and blends over, obviously, into mission assurance. And how do you mitigate those threats?
I think that companies need to acknowledge that everyone's a target for someone wanting your information. And being able to sort of come forward and kind of proactively talk about the fact, you know, what you're doing within cybersecurity will help us as a consumer of the information and the capabilities that you're providing. It doesn't take us off the hook. We still also need to do our own checks. So I'm hoping that because of all of the information that is going to be out there, data collected, that we're going to have multiple data points to be able to check things against. I mean, that's sort of a simple way of if you're taking a picture of the same place with two cameras, and they're different, then one of them is wrong. It's an easy way of looking at it. That's far too simple, but I'm hoping that then the amount of data that's out there is going to help us to be able to determine if something is being manipulated. But we have to be aware that there are reasons that people not only want to put malware in the systems, they want to not let us see what's happening out there. Denial and deception has been around for as long as we've been taking pictures of things. The idea of people actually manipulating the images themselves as a form of denial and deception is something that we have to acknowledge will be happening. We've seen a lot of it with deep fakes and other facial recognition and other similar technologies. So we know that it can be done, and we know that it can be done really, really well. We can't pretend that that's not a threat, and we just have to figure out different ways to approach it. So we are working through that, but great ideas are definitely welcome in this particular environment. I think it's only going to get worse. Frankly.
That's Dr. Stacey Dixon, Deputy Director of the National Geospatial Intelligence Agency, at a recent panel for the 2019 Intelligence and National Security Summit. Joining her was Tina Harrington, Director of the Signal Intelligence Systems Acquisition Directorate for the National Reconnaissance Office, and Major General John Shaw, Deputy Commander for Air Force Space Command. If you missed any of this episode, you can find it online. Go to federalnewsnetwork.com and search Agency in Focus. I'm Eric White.
Thank you for listening to the Intelligence Agency in Focus, sponsored by Leidos on Federal News Radio, part of the Federal News Network.